So, hi, I'm Katie, and I'm here to talk to you about the importance of animals for older adults confronting age-related changes. And this project is actually part of my NSF iGroup training, and I worked with a team of students from several different disciplines at my university to formulate this study. And so we came from backgrounds such as physical therapy, exercise science, evolutionary biology, biochemistry, public health, behavior and promotion, and psychology. So it was a very interdisciplinary team of students that were brought together by the faculty. So we did not know each other before we came together, and once they brought us together, we were to design and follow through with a study related to healthy aging. And our program that we're a part of focuses on healthy aging because the number of older adults in the United States is rapidly increasing. And by the year 2030, the number of U.S. older adults over the age of 65 is expected to exceed 71 million individuals. And so as this massive cohort reaches this older age, they will experience changes in physical, emotional, and memory-related health. And it will take an interdisciplinary approach to meet their diverse needs. And we have no conflicts and relationships to disclose. So our interdisciplinary team decided to explore how older adults perceive age-related changes and find out how they incorporate preventative strategies in their lives and how they obtain information about age-related changes. And while the participants in our study did discuss their perceptions of their age-related changes and their information-seeking behaviors, they also shared many stories about pets and the animal relationships and interactions in their lives. You know, which is often the case in qualitative research, it's exploratory. You set out with a set of questions you think you're going to find certain answers to. We thought we were going to be finding out about doctor's appointments and websites they visited, but they started talking about animals and pet relationships. So this analysis that I'm presenting to you today is about those serendipitous findings that we did not expect to encounter. We designed our study using the health belief model, which is a popular model in health behavior that aids in the investigation and understanding of health behaviors. And we decided that we were going to have focus groups. So we ended up having 4 focus groups, and we created a semi-structured interview guide. And we also had a short demographic survey that participants completed. Our focus groups were conducted at the Oregon State University campus, and our participants were all from the Oregon area in the Willamette Valley area. We recruited our participants from the Oregon State Life Registry, which is a database of research participants maintained by our Center for Healthy Aging Research, where older adults can sign up online saying they would like to participate in aging-related research. So we were very lucky to have that resource and able to recruit a lot of older adults. So all of our focus groups were audio recorded, and then the student team did the transcription and later analyzed the transcripts in Atlas TI for thematic content. A little bit about our participants. There were 24 women and 10 men who attended our 4 focus group meetings. And there were, around the age of 70, they were very highly educated individuals, and they were all non-Hispanic white, and most of them were retired. When we began to analyze this data, we discovered that animals were really important to our older adults and how they coped with their aging-related changes. So participants frequently mentioned the animals that they interacted with. They mentioned domestic animals such as dogs, horses, cats, and chickens. And they also talked a lot about birds, squirrels, raccoons, and even bears, wild animals that they were encountering in their daily lives. We found that the animals were important in their lives in 3 specific ways. And the first way that animals were important to them was in regulating their mood and helping them deal with stress. So animals assisted in coping with both positive and negative emotional changes in the lives of our older adult participants. And conversations around moods and emotions and stress that included animals explained the uplifting, entertaining, and soothing aspects of the animal interactions. chickens were frequently discussed, and interactions with chickens brought the participants joy. Now, our area, the Willamette Valley, is rural. There are a lot of, most people have some properties that they can have chickens, and I know that's not common in every neighborhood, but our participants seem to have a lot of chickens. So, the first quote I'm going to share with you is from Beatrice. She's an 84-year-old woman who lived alone, and it illustrates the effect that chickens can have on mood. So she shared, "There's nothing more wonderful than listening to the chickens talk while they're scratching around. They talk and it's the sweetest sound you've ever heard." Another participant, Joanne, she's 56 years old, and she wasn't retired yet, but she owned several pets, and she described the happiness the chickens added to her life, and she said, "She recently got chickens, and they are a total hoot. Yeah, they're hilarious. Their personalities come out once you're around them long enough." In addition to listening to the banter of the chickens, another participant stated that just songbird watching was soothing, and it illustrated the role of wild birds in creating a calming state among older adults. And though our interactions that the participants shared were mostly positive and mood-enhancing, the next quote I'm going to share with you illustrates the worry that animal ownership may induce in older adults. So there's a conversation I'm about to play for you between Barbara, who is the first person that you'll hear. She's age 71, and she adopted several pets from patients that she cared for in hospice. And then there's Cecilia, who you'll hear second, and she's 67, and she's a pet owner. And then Howard is the third person you're going to hear, and he is 82 and a non-pet owner. And it's going to illustrate the worries and concerns that pet ownership can hold for older adults. And that little dog, the tennis ball, is my baby, Lufa. My doggie. So here, I'm going to play this for you.
I think animals are positive, but I have to say, as you get older, you think, what happens to me if something happens to me? What's going to happen to these animals?
Mm-hmm.
That is a concern of mine. All my animals, because I worked in hospice for a while, all my animals are patients that died. And so now I've adopted them. Now I'm thinking the same thing. What's going to happen to them? You know, but they're very positive in my life.
Except I'm getting ready to take a vacation at some hospital.
Yeah. I like to be able to walk out the door, lock the door, walk away, get the car, and drive home.
Yeah, that would be
and
nice.
So they did speak a lot about their animals, and this conversation illustrated the aspects of animal ownership that could cause stress for the older adults in our study. So feeling responsible for pets when desiring to live a less tied down lifestyle during retirement, having trouble finding someone to care for your animals when you'd like to schedule a vacation, and the fear of what would happen to the pets when the owner got older themselves and passed away. The second area where animals were important for the older adults in our study was in companionship and social support. So animals were often discussed as though they were family members. And even one woman shared about how her neighbor would carry around a chicken and put it in a little bonnet and like it was a baby and just carry it around the neighborhood. So these animals took on really important roles in their lives. And especially when someone was coping with the loss of a loved one or such as a spouse, animals took on a really important role. Animals were also described as companions that were sharing in the aging experience alongside with them, which is going to be illustrated by this quote that I'm going to share with you now, which is from Lori, who's age 62. Lori had suffered from chronic illness for most of her life, and she shared that she says, "I have issues with remembering things. So what I do, if I think of it at that time, that's when I have to deal with it. If it's in the middle of fixing the dog's dinner, she just has to deal with it until I write something down or go put something away that I remembered I needed to do. Over the several years that I've had her, she just has learned to deal with it. And she, too, is aging. So I think sometimes, too, she forgets." So in this instant, the dog was a partner and companion that was experiencing the aging process with her, and it presents this idea of parallel aging. And it's interesting to think about this because the role of this animal may be during when you're in your later years, the animal relationship maybe is a little bit different than the relationship that you're having with your animal when you're in your 30s and your 20s and you have kids around. So as you're an older adult, you're aging, so is your animal, and you're sharing in that process. So the third way that animals were described as being important was in maintaining engagement in life. So animals were mentioned as helping the older adults stay on schedules. They provided them with a sense of accomplishment, and they encouraged them to participate in activity. For example, wild bears motivated one participant to construct an elaborate way to keep bears away from his home. He lived in Tahoe in California half the year, I guess, and there were a lot of bears that would invade the homes in his neighborhood. And I'm not going to get into all the details, but it was this man used to be an engineer, and this is where he was devoting his engineering mind to now. This interaction with these wild bears stimulated creativity and kept him active and kept his mind working. And participants also mentioned caring for a pet such as a dog or chicken was a motivator for keeping on a schedule and remembering tasks. And wild animals such as birds encouraged participants to go outside and enjoy nature more. So animals also motivated some participants to better handle age-related changes in memory, which is illustrated in the next quote that I'm going to share with you. This is from Barbara, and when dealing with age-related memory slips, she was motivated to learn new ways to remind herself of things to remember as a result of owning her cat. So here she's talking about how she reminds herself and the memory cheats that she's developed. So she says, you have to. The organizational stuff, and then you give yourself visual clues. Like, if I left my cat out, I leave my reminder in the middle of the table, and that means there's a cat outside and you have to bring the cat in. You begin to depend on that kind of stuff, really. So as a result of her feelings of responsibility towards her cat, she developed a whole system of memory cheats that she first started using with her cat, but then it spread to other areas of her life as well. So we found three main areas in which the animals in our study were important for the older adults. So in helping cope with mood and stress, and sometimes maybe inducing stress, providing companionship and social support, and maintaining engagement in life. Many of our findings support earlier studies that show an association between animal interaction and older adult well-being. And animals were perceived as a source of social and emotional support, often in lieu of human support. And participants who own pets often cited their caretaking duties as a major motivator to engage in physical activity. And planned bird watching and frequent observation of wild animals, such as bears, were cited as being emotionally uplifting and or mentally stimulating for participants. And we feel like our study is of value because it uncovered the important role of animal interactions in the everyday lives of older adults as they engage with the aging process. And the study illuminated the need to further investigate many areas of human and animal interactions and their impact on older adult health beyond just providing companionship and encouraging physical activity. And we also thought, based on our discussions that we had with our participants, that it may not be necessary for communities wanting older adults to own an animal in order to gain benefit from interacting with animals. So based on our preliminary findings from this exploratory study, we have identified several areas of future research that we would like to investigate. We would like to identify and compare effects of benefits derived from animal interactions based on the quality and the quantity of the interaction. And we would also like to investigate ways in which interacting with animals requires older adults to engage in planning, problem solving, and creative thinking. And thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. I'd like to open the floor for questions for Katie, and then we can move on to everybody. I'll start out. I found this is the first time I've seen the mention of wild animals being imported. And me personally, being a mountain biker, that's part of the experience for me getting out. You report every turtle, every deer, or everything you report. It's like, you know, I got to see the so-and-so today. So it's important. I find that very interesting how that came out in your study.
Yeah, it did. And yeah, we thought it was interesting, too. I mean, all of our findings were serendipitous. We did not ask specific questions about animal ownership or animal interactions. We were asking the participants how they were perceiving their age-related changes. And then they just started sharing about how their animals helped them cope. And then the wild animal interactions were, I think with the bears, it was what do you do to stay mentally aware. One man, he started talking about what he had to keep on top of, that he was always busy protecting his home from the bear. No, we haven't explored that yet. That's something we should definitely look into. Other questions? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So we prefer for the elderly to age in place, but regretfully a lot of folks have to go into long-term care facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see your research moving in a direction where perhaps we can make recommendations that animals be part of those long-term care?
Yeah, actually, I'm in the beginnings of collaborating with someone who is investigating the benefits of dogs trained to help older adults with dementia. So that they will definitely be brought into the nursing facility, and we'll be looking at how they are integrated into that environment as well.
Did you account for socioeconomic status in your study participants? And the reasoning I'm asking that is because another source of stress, especially for those older populations with domesticated animals, the concept of parallel aging that you brought up, was, you know, the financial responsibilities that come along with having an aging domesticated animal, such as vet visits and specialized food, you know, if they happen to have gone on a certain diet.
Right. So this was a qualitative study, so we just had the participants that enrolled, and we went, I mean, I did present that they were highly educated. We didn't collect income information from them, but they were highly educated, so, and they were mostly retired, so I'm assuming they're on their retirement income. But we did not ask any questions about age-related changes in finances. But they did speak a lot about their issues with insurance and mm-hmm. Medicare and paying for medical bills. Any other questions?
Moving forward, would you ever try to look at more urban areas? Because I know like Oregon is, you know, very beautiful, and you know, you have more space to do more things as well, but how would that affect people who are living in more urban areas and how would that affect their onset of
Right, that's a really interesting question, and that was in our, I don't know how to go back here. How do I go back?
Just
one slide at a time. So we were interested in investigating, you know, whether it's the quality and quantity, you know, how much is it, do people who own a cat get the same benefit as somebody who has a bird feeder outside their window, and how much time do you actually need to spend being exposed to a wild animal versus a domestic pet to actually get benefit. So it's a big area for future interest, future research.
In the future, have you thought about maybe confirming the qualitative results with some biomarkers, such as cortisol? You know, I guess you talk about the stress. I'm assuming, for instance, the man you talked about with the bear, you know, there was a little bit of stress when you kept seeing wild bears build their fence. I mean, would you ever, that'd be something that you would consider as maybe confirming the results by cortisol levels?
I'm not sure if I would use cortisol levels because cortisol, it varies so greatly throughout the day. But I would say maybe cortisol is probably the one biomarker that may be indicative of stress besides just using self-report. But I'm all about integrating technology into studies with older adults. So if there was a way to measure that from like heart rate variability, maybe I would incorporate that.
Okay, open the floor for all our speakers, so including Dr. Bauer, so if you got questions for any of their presentations during this session.
The best approach to conservation efforts is almost, we see the environmental impacts and the disease emergence. So maybe people will be afraid of bats, but maybe we approach it from a conservation aspect, like, hey, let's protect the forest because this is home to the bats. We need to, I think it's going to take a multidisciplinary approach to answering that question. And I see that, I actually went to a wildlife disease conference a while back, and I met a lot of wildlife disease biologists, and they hate the term of bats and disease because they think it gives bats a bad rep. So there's kind of this animosity between health of people and health of animals, and I think that by working together, hopefully we can kind of find a way to address that. But I think by conserving our natural resources and the environment, we're going to actually help protect our health and the health and the safety of bats, because we do need them. I mean, they're very ecologically and, I guess, financially important animals to our environment. As stated earlier, they're worth over $3.7 billion a year in terms of reduction of use of crops and pesticides and stuff. So I think that it's just kind of one of those, it's going to be kind of hairy to figure out, but we can do it. We just can't stay within just the realm of public health. We've got to reach out to others and see what we can come up with. So. Well, they actually tried to build some new subdivisions in that area near Bracken Bat Cave, and they luckily got the money to buy the land, but at the time, it's one of those issues where what happens if you did build that subdivision? Because you have 20 million female bats and their pups emerging. So I think it was kind of, we kind of avoided something, but it is something to keep in mind when someone is building a new subdivision in an area where there are known colonies of bats. So.
Well, the city of Austin gets along with its bats very, very well.
Yes, I love, yeah, Austin. Conga Street, Street Bridge, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I used to serve on the board of directors for the Connecticut Ornithological Association, which is a bunch of bird watchers, and I was always the youngest person in the room. Usually a couple of decades. And people who are 70, 80, and 90 years old hopping around in the woods getting ticks. We think that if you could take a cohort of, you know, it's 500 people who are in this organization, and probably, you know, 490 of them were over 65, retired and into citizen science, they do a lot of new things all the time. And if you could get them to talk about their experience and tell you when they pick up kids.
More questions for any of the speakers now, or for me? Okay, well, thank you very much. We'd like to thank all the speakers. And We have a special co-session scheduled. Let me get the info for that. If you're interested, if I can find it. 196, and it's a co-session with epidemiology, and there'll be some more One Health issues if you're interested.